All please rise. Join me in the salute to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. Our deputy clerk, Duncan, will now take the roll call.
Councilmember Watkins.
Present.
Here.
Councilmember Olson. Here.
Councilmember Ingram.
Here.
Councilmember Wetzler.
Here.
Councilmember Burrs.
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Here. President Confort. Thank you, Council. Okay, next up is the public comment period. This is the period where members of the public can speak on anything that's not on tonight's agenda. If it's on tonight's agenda, then we will allow you to speak, and anyone will speak, and we'll stay here as long as we need to be. But this is anything that's not on tonight's agenda, anything that you'd like to address the council for. It's not on tonight's agenda. So anyone would like to speak on anything that's not on tonight's agenda? Anyone? Anyone? Anyone?
Bueller.
Right there. Welcome, sir.
Hello. My name is Gary Bannerman. I live at 6810 Portaway, Burndale. I guess I wanted to maybe stand up here, and one of the things that I wanted to say to you folks, I'm a little bit frustrated. I recently found out that the lamination removed 80 acres of land and put it into trust, and they're working on another 80 acres. And then last week I received a survey from Olympia, and it dealt with the gist of it. I'll summarize was, would I support a large box retail at Slater Road, 2 6,000 square foot retail businesses, and a number of questions around does the Lummi Nation doing a good job with education, watershed management, land stewardship, and the survey went on and on and on. So I just kind of, you know, I know I've been in here before at meetings, and I've heard them talk about wanting to partner with the county, the city, sharing tax dollars as they develop that area, and now I see them maybe going out on their own. And I know some people here are probably wanting concern about the 1 cent tax on gasoline, and we're looking for funding in the city. I'm a resident. I'm just concerned about the losing that tax land out there at Slater Road and what that means to the city. So,
yeah, the Lummies have put about 80 acres, not all of it in the city limits, about 10 acres of the 80 is in the city limits. The other 70 acres is out in Bellingham's UGA and out into the county. They did that about a year or more ago. But now here just recently, probably in the last 2 or 3 months, they have continued to purchase property adjacent, and we're talking on the south side of Slater, the southwest side of Slater, I should say.
Okay.
And they've continued to buy property adjacent to those 80 acres, and they're now asking the Bureau of Indian Affairs to place another 83 or so acres into trust.
Sure.
So all told, they will probably have nearly about 160 acres if and when the Bureau of Indian Affairs approves that. I was unaware, and I don't know if anyone else was aware. I understand it was a phone survey that you...
Yes.
Right. I just heard about that today. I know nothing of it.
Yeah. We've,
at least I'm not aware of anyone in the city speaking with the Lummies about that. It appears to be something that they hired a firm out of Olympia to do. We are currently talking with the Lummies. They are interested in building a commercial development out there, the size and extent of which I don't even think they... truly, no.
I know. I was surprised that the survey told me 2 6,000 square foot retail businesses and a large box store.
Right. In their application, the newest application for trust land, they specifically call out two anticipated uses. One is a convenience store gas station, and the other is what they're terming a cultural center, a museum. That's the only thing that they call out in their application, but, you know, 160 acres is a whole lot for a convenience store, a gas station, and a museum. So it wouldn't be surprising for them to actually have a greater economic development interest.
I think it's great. You know, we all want to develop property, and that's what some people do for a business. I'm all for the Lummies buying land and developing it. But just why would they want to put it in a trust? It puts an economic advantage to them, maybe, by doing it. Must be a reason,
that's probably,
right?
The answer.
Instead of just
right there,
putting in the businesses,
yeah,
and letting us get the sales tax, or as I say, the city of Ferndale get the sales tax.
So stay right there, Mr. Bannerman, because I think I have councilmen that would like to speak to you. So we're starting with Councilperson Mutchler, then Councilperson Olson, and then Councilperson Goodrich.
Okay.
Okay.
Hi, Mr. Bannerman. Thank you for coming. The survey was a phone survey.
Yes.
And why we just curious, because you're a property owner on I-5.
When they the first thing they said to me, they wanted to know if I worked for the newspaper, was affiliated as a reporter, or if anybody in my household was. I answered no. They said, well, we're conducting a survey, and would you have time to answer a few questions? And after about 25 questions, I said, are we not done? And they said, well, we have a few more. I said, I'll give you a few more. About six more questions. I said, I'm done. So I never even got to the end.
Do you think it was a random to you, or do you think it was
I think it was because I'm a voter and a taxpayer in Whatcom County.
You don't know anyone else.
You don't know anybody else
who got a phone call. You're the only one, as far as you know.
Well, I've was gone out of town since then, so I haven't. I'm sharing my knowledge and my experience.
And then, Greg, I was curious. Doesn't the city typically protest from fee simple to trust on these things? We just don't even protest anymore.
Yeah.
What is our official posture on these things?
We
have a pouting posture, perhaps.
Yeah, we did challenge, if you will, or appeal the first one.
Yes.
To no avail. And then we did a little bit of research, and in the last probably 20 years, there has never been a trust application denied by the Bureau of
Indian Affairs. We don't even trust. And then
we sent a response in.
Yeah, we sent.
Then the last question is, if they, well, currently, our understanding is, if it's in the, well, if this is in the city limits, some of this is not, but if it's in the city limits, we get the retail tax. At this point in time, we still do.
Exactly.
What about gasoline taxes? Do we know, and can we
find out? Right, and this may go back to Mr. Bannerman's question about why put it in trust. The biggest reason why the Lummies want to put it in trust is that they are a sovereign nation according to the treaties that the U.S. has signed with them. It'd be like us wanting to take over an area of a city but not annex it. I mean, you either do or you don't. And in this case, they have a deep-held and honest desire to expand their land holdings. And in the latest trust application, they specifically say that they want to do this for economic development purposes. And I think anyone who looks on a map and sees the Slater interchange realizes that indeed makes sense. So I'm not surprised at that. But as far as the economics of it, yes. Currently, if there's any retail sales tax generated on lands that are in trust in the city limits,
yes,
the city continues to get the same sales tax as if it was non-trust land. What we don't get would be
property
tax, hotel motel tax if there was a hotel, a utility tax on any water sewer storm, gasoline tax.
We wouldn't get
unless there was an agreement on any of those taxes. If there was an agreement between the city and the tribe, then we could get it. But lacking an agreement, it is considered sovereign land like Belgium.
Even though we can collect the sales tax.
It's a state of Washington sales tax. And even though the tribe is a sovereign nation, they still are within the boundaries of the state of Washington.
So can we confirm that we wouldn't get any of the gas taxes?
True.
We can. Is that...
Yeah,
we're positive about that.
I'm sure of that.
But we would get sale, if they sell sodas, we would get sales tax.
Yes. Lacking any agreements to the contrary.
That was one of the questions.
Now,
would I support a truck stop?
Let's do that. They could protest that Native American members.
Oh yeah.
I understand that.
Yeah, there's always a nuance.
Yeah.
Tribal members don't pay state sales tax for sales on trust land. The tribe has the ability, all tribes in Washington State, have the ability to institute their own sales tax, but it would only be applicable to tribal members.
Right.
So you can kind of see the logic. If tribal members
don't
pay state.
But I don't see the logic of us being able to receive sales tax, but not gas tax. I don't understand that.
Separate pact made with the state of Washington.
Yeah,
during Governor Gregoire's
administration. Yeah, there's a compact. There's a gas tax compact.
And let's for audience education, because it was a fairly substantial Supreme Court ruling last year, and it was brought on by the
Great Wolf Lodge.
Yeah, it was the Great Wolf Lodge.
Down in Chehalis.
Chehalis.
Right.
Chehalis County? No, it's...
I'm not sure.
But intermingled with that was the Tulalip tribe, and this was a very significant court case in the fact that before the state of Washington thought that, okay, if I'm a tribal entity on trust land, I do not have to pay any property tax. That's never been questioned. Neither have we questioned that. But in the Tulalip situation and then the Great Wolf Lodge situation, the Great Wolf Lodge is 51% owned by an entity out of Minnesota. And so their premise was, okay, if you're not a tribal entity, you're a private entity, you should pay property tax. In the Tulalips, that was the situation where Snohomish County basically had non-tribal entities pay property tax. That went to the Supreme Court of the United States, highest court that we have, and they said, no, it doesn't matter who is renting or if you are on trust land, you're not paying property tax. So that was a pretty significant one. It's almost it's a $5 million refund that basically Snohomish County has to give back to those entities because they don't have to pay property tax. Chehalis was different. They never started collecting that property tax. So
let's do that work session we've talked about because this is an important...
And for you to know, and you go into questions, I have a meeting with the tribal chairman tomorrow at 1. To kind of, that was interesting information. It's like, what's your survey? What are you doing? So... we'll see if we can find out. Councilperson Olson?
As far as putting into trust, nothing has superseded the Oneida versus the State of New York's decision at the Supreme Court, has it?
No.
That one, you can look that up online. State as the Oneida Nation versus the State of New York, where at that time, I believe it was 2009, they were not, the state sued tribe that you can't just take whatever you want and put it into tribal trust land, and they won. However, that costs a lot of money to go and fight, and that's, we're going over budget now. We don't have that kind of money to fight.
I'm not wanting to fight. I would look for partnerships and agreements and maybe get the revenue. I'm hoping that you guys know of the situation.
It gets very complicated because it has to do with whether there's...
Laying there and doing
okay.
That.
Now, the Lummies have stated in their application that it will not be used for gaming purposes, which is an important distinction because you can't go back and change it later.
Well, okay. let's clarify your comment because trust applications are approved through Portland, Oregon, Bureau of Indian Affairs, Portland, Oregon, and since 1990, it's over its 146 trust applications. Trust applications have been denied if they've been applications for gaming. So in California, they have it. But zero applications for economic development. And that's zero. And that's basically, it's on a fast track with the Obama administration to basically speed up that process. So the trust application is speedier. So since 1990, zero denial of trust applications. Not that you can't protest, and people do, and we have, but you have to know the track record of the current thing is if it's for economic development, let it go through. And there's no limitation on what they can purchase. I mean, they can purchase anything.
Sure.
Councilperson Birch.
I do not.
I'm sorry. Councilperson Goodrich.
I was just curious about the flagpoles and lighting that they put up on that land. I don't know if you're aware of it. It looks like it's off of Cope Road, right where the road
so
bends.
Last Monday.
Oh. Yeah, because I dropped my wife off at work, and it was still dark, and beautiful flags and lit up there and stuff. It looks like it's off of Cope Road.
It's on their property on Cope Road, it'd be as if you put a flagpole up in your yard. We would not have any permitting issues on that.
Yeah, they did put up a sign months and months ago that was in the right-of-way that they eventually took down just because they weren't aware of the right-of-way line. But no, I wasn't aware of that, but if it is indeed on their land, it's...
Get off it later. It looks really neat.
2 3-foot poles, one American flag, London needs to play.
It's on their land.
Any more questions for our guest, Mr. Bannerman? The statement is your administration still continues to think that we have relationships, that we will continue negotiation with the Lummi Nation.
Good. Thank you.
Okay, that was an interesting sideway. Yeah. Anyone else would like to speak? Yes, sir. 3 minutes. Exactly.
Papa John, 72 Malloy Avenue. Now, you've heard me say before, I come here for two reasons. The primary reason I come here is for vertical reasons. That's my chief loyalty. But secondly, it's horizontal. And I call my Papa name Papa John for a reason, because you all are, whether you want to be or not, part of my family. And I say that for a reason. I've talked to two of you personally about this. What I'm about to say is not meant to be a challenge to your personal integrity, but it is meant to be a challenge to your political decision of last time, last meeting. I left here with a apparently false assumption that when you as a council vote for a 6 months moratorium, you mean 6 months moratorium. And I'm extremely unhappy that I do want to say thanks to three of you, Keith, John, and Carol, is my understanding, that you voted to maintain the moratorium. Four of you voted otherwise, and I am very unhappy that you did that, because I left here with that kind of an assumption. Now, I went to see the Seattle Seahawks game, but if I'd have known that 6 months doesn't mean 6 months, I would have stayed here and given my arguments why, yes, not new or different, but I believe my moral values represents a significant portion of this city, and I couldn't be more strongly opposed to marijuana. And the fact is the only function of marijuana is to alter your brain. That's a fact. The fact is that it has a detrimental effect on developing brains up to and including the age of 25. That's a fact. And the fact that we want to use it for a tax or a source of income, to me, is just outrageous. Why don't we just start taxing prostitution and any other kind of drug you want to think of, if that's what your main aim is? And then as far as I guess I don't understand zoning, because my understanding of zoning is the whole purpose of it is for us as a city to determine which people we want in our community in terms of businesses and where we want them, and housing and where we want them, and what kind of housing and where we want them. So to argue that this is something that's not germane to that, to me, is a very specious argument that even borders on fatuous. We all know that, in fact, the truth is, I've even thinking about this, only
30 seconds.
Half tongue in cheek, is that maybe we ought to change our name from Ferndale to Marijuanaville, and change the Fern to the cannabis. I'm not pleased. If you make 6 months, let's make it 6 months, okay? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, anyone else for the open comment period? Anything else that you'd like? Okay. We'll close the comment period. We are now before you, Council, is the consent agenda. So moved. Okay,
second.
Moved by Councilperson Ingram, seconded by Councilperson Virsch. Further discussion, seeing none. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Okay, next up is a presentation on flood awareness from Public Works. All the way back there. You want me to do that? Okay, read the proclamation first. Okay. Proclamation, whereas the city of Ferndale has experienced the social, economic, and environmental consequences of damage to property caused by flood disasters, and whereas Flood Awareness Week is an opportunity to raise awareness about the importance of preparing and understanding flooding in Ferndale, and to encourage all citizens to better prepare their homes and businesses for the upcoming flood season, and whereas emergency preparedness depends on the leadership and efforts of public officials dedicated to public safety, and whereas emergency preparedness requires the establishment of far-sighted and proactive public policy, and whereas, as being informed and prepared and by taking proper protective action, the people of Ferndale should reduce the potential for loss of life and damage to property when threatened by those events. Now, therefore, I, Gary Jensen, Mayor, City of Ferndale, do hereby proclaim the week of October 20th to 26th, 2014, as Flood Awareness Week. And I signed it before I read it. Welcome. There's some guy following you.
Some big, creepy guy.
Thank you, Councilperson Ingram.
Night.
You see okay?
Sure.
Let's shut this in.
Forward. Take your hand. You need to move forward.
Yeah, the whole thing.
While we're getting this set up, I just wanted to mention, too, that this Saturday we're having a mitigation planting project at the New Fernell Library, so we're going to be planting native shrubs and trees. So if you're interested, it's from 9 to noon on Saturday. Doesn't matter if it's raining or sunny, we'll be out there, so I'll just put some flyers up here.
And all I'll be doing is planting trees that will already be there.
Yep. Yep, that's right.
We have 1,000 shrubs and trees?
Yeah, 1,765.
Okay, that's a lot.
Will there be snacks?
Yes, food will be provided.
Okay. It's thinking. It's thinking too hard. It worked in rehearsal.
Going to speak while on front of that computer, so I move the microphone for you, or?
My name is Wendy LaRock. I'm the stormwater manager for the city. And so first, I'm just going to kind of go through a timeline or a quick overview of what I'm going to talk about. Let's see. That'd be fun. So we'll first go over the annual meetings we have to prepare for flood season, then our flood projects, what we do for the city for flood awareness, our Ferndale flood hotspots, and then the community rating system, which is new this year. All right, so every spring, Public Works meets with the Army Corps of Engineers to go over our 2010 project, which was this section of the levee. The Corps rebuilt it, and then so we just go through and see if everything's still as it should be, make sure there are no holes or sloughing, anything that would compromise the levee section. In the summer, Bo, who will be speaking after me, and I go into the Nooksack and go against the levee section, basically looking for the same things, but from the river. Make sure the picture's rotated. Then in the fall, starting about a week ago, we met with the Whatcom Unified, and that's a meeting where basically all agencies in Whatcom County come together and learn about, you know, which what the weather's going to be like this season, essentially. So this year we talked about how it's going to be a weak El Nino, meaning there should be an over average, a warmer temperature and less precipitation. And then we just touch base, talking about who has what supplies and if any emergency management numbers have changed, that sort of thing. So we're prepared if a flood emergency were to happen. Then next week or the week after, we'll go out with the Corps again and just basically review the hotspots, the areas in Ferndale that flood more often, and go over the whole levee section and making sure we've got, again, everybody's contacts correct, and just kind of touching base before the flood season starts. The middle bullet there is the FEMA public assistance meeting, and we do that about every other year. That's meeting with the gal from FEMA and going over all the paperwork we'd have to fill out if there were to be an emergency that qualified for FEMA reimbursement. Then we go back to the public works staff and have a flood prep meeting. So these are pictures from last year's. We basically go through, talk about, you know, what we found at all the meetings and decide, you know, if we need more supplies. Generally, we're pretty stocked up. And then we also do some sandbag training, which is shown here. The year before this, the police station is to your left here, to my left at least, and the property owner downhill was experiencing some runoff, so we went ahead and tried to make this meeting useful and sandbag that area for the winter for them.
Good evening, Council. Thanks for having us here and sitting through this one more time. Some of you, it's old hat. Some, it's pretty new. But anyway, we tried to simplify everything for our flood prep and our flood response and make it as easy to read and as easy to enact and as easy to respond as possible. And that's what you see with the flood prep checklist, is these are things that we go through every fall to make sure that we're ready, make sure we're prepared. If it does flood, we'll give the best response we can. So during an event, our mayor, administrator, or mayor pro tem can initiate a state of emergency for our local city without going through Whatcom County process or FEMA process or any of that stuff. So this would generate us springing into action, so to speak, and this is where our lines of communication come in. And the reason why we put this together is a couple of reasons. After the 2009 event, all of us sat down as a city, police department, public works staff, office staff, administration, we all sat down and said, hey, what do we need to work on? Well, one of them obviously was no cell service worked anywhere. There was no cell service. Why was there no cell service? Well, part of the reason is we were generating our own issues with I'm calling or talking to 10 different people. They're talking to 10 different people, and they're talking to 10 different people. So we're kind of getting in our own way. So we came up with, hey, let's at least do our part to eliminate some of that cell discussion, and we'll just streamline some things. So hopefully this will make it better. We haven't been able to practice this in a live event. We've done some dummy stuff with it, but we haven't fought a real flood with this. So hopefully it works, and people can get on there and say, hey, you know what? I have some news, but maybe I should just tell this person, and they can pass that on down. So this lists who those folks are in the communication flow chart. I won't read them all, but obviously it goes down, and this is kind of where we start naming names a little bit other than positions. We try to get the key personnel that, you know, we go through the strengths and weaknesses of each individual working for the city, and what are they strong at? So we try to take what they're strong at and put them in a spot where, hey, this is really going to work for us. It's probably going to work for them. They'll feel a little bit more comfortable in it, because when it does come and it is an emergency, people kind of get on their heels a little bit waiting for something to hit them in the nose. We want to be proactive, and hopefully they're comfortable in their own skin getting out there and doing it. Just keep kind of going through it. And then if you have any questions about any of this stuff, feel free to ask. Like I said, I don't want to read it all because you guys have seen most of it before. One of the common questions that we do get is, where can I get sandbags? Up until we declare an emergency, you can get sandbags at Home Depot or Lowe's or a hardware store. We do not give them away until emergency has been declared by Whatcom County, then we can get it paid for. That's when FEMA dollars start coming towards our little neck of the woods, is when they declare an emergency and then we hit that generated number threshold. And I don't remember what that is for 2014-15 winter, but then we can start getting some of that stuff reimbursed. So we kind of follow and go along with the county guidelines. When there's an emergency declared, we can start doing that. So our fill station for that is in City Hall parking lot out behind. And now we're going to change that and have them go up to the city shop and do it there. So we'll have volunteers building sandbags that get put on pallets for us to fight floods, and we'll also have another group up there getting sandbags to help themselves with their localized flooding. Is that you? Is that me?
We don't really have a lot of flood projects this year. We're still participating in the system-wide improvement framework with the county. So, again, that's a group. Basically, every levee owner in the county gets together. We've been trying to figure out a way that we can keep all of the levees in the county in the core program. What's happened in the past is that there's a lot of vegetation on the levees. Fish and Wildlife and DOE like that, the Corps not so much. So what we've been doing is getting together, and we have a couple templates now where levee owners can manage their own levees. They can decide how much vegetation they want on there as long as they stay within these templates, and they just have to manage the vegetation in the way that's outlined. So let's
see. Do we own our own levees now? I mean, are you going to take care of the vegetation on the levees, or have we always...
Yeah, we've been the sponsor of the levee from the bridge, the Main Street bridge, mm-hmm. down to the county line.
Okay.
And then the county line south is the county.
So you're maintaining all that vegetation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep.
So that's kind of what I said the first bullet there, that the templates are more or less done. Now we're moving on to prioritizing the maintenance and the projects. So in this picture here, this is the last section of the levee that has really not been rebuilt. But as I showed you earlier with that core project in 2010, that section looks really nice. This section needs to be worked on. It's just a matter of funding. So this project is in the county's overall plan, not only just that little section, but setting the whole levee back to Ferndale Road. But that's like a $5.5 million project, so it's a ways out. And we have been looking for grant funding for that project. All right. Back to Bo.
So through the years, different agencies and emergency management services has really done a proactive outreach program with flood awareness. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with insurance, you know, will I flood, won't I flood, all that kind of good stuff. But the basics of the water over the road, it's really coming to a point where it's really a public safety issue. And although this water doesn't look that deep, you can still see the mailbox posts, you know, the water over the roadway sign. It's only about 12 inches maybe. You could probably drive through that. The problem with driving through that is what's under it. If you can't see through that muddy water, you don't know what's left of that road. There could be a huge crevice right in the middle of that thing just washed out. So the big premise now is turn around, don't drown. They have several different slogans out there on bumper stickers and all kinds of different things. But so the outreach is there. You can go to our website, cityofferndale.org, and we have all this stuff under our flood headline. You can look at all this stuff. Sam's done a really good job of taking the information that we've compiled over the years and kind of sifted through it and organizing it and put it on our website. And it's a really good place for all kinds of information regarding floods. And then Wendy sends out a flood prep newsletter in October with the utility billing every year, kind of letting people know, hey, it's that time of year again, start thinking about it. And it's kind of a funny story. One person I talked to during the 2009 event, I went to their house and tried to explain to them that there was a possibility their house could flood. The guy looks me right in the eyes and says, "What's going to flood our house?" Okay. He's literally, I could throw a rock from his house to the river. So, you know, it's just know your surroundings. Know where you're at. Be aware of, little streams that run over Imhoff Road. You know, it's not just the river. There's all kinds of different things that can flood it. You know, we get a lot of puddling, a lot of leaves over catch basins, localized flooding. It can make your car hydroplane. Just be aware, be cognizant of what's on the road. And then we kind of went through this one already with the sandbags, emergency declaration, where you can get them. That information's on our website. If you call City Hall during an emergency event, somebody will answer the phone. We have a designated person, and they will be able to tell you all this information. All the volunteers will be directed to the city shop. For lack of a better word, we have a gatekeeper that will be there checking people in. You will write your name, phone number, and address. When you leave, you will check out with that person, let them know that you're leaving so that we can kind of have some accountability. Also, we know who to say thank you to when it's all over. That's a big part of how we fight floods is with volunteer efforts. Obviously, the 14 guys on the crew probably can't get it done by themselves. So it's really good when the city kind of attacks us as a whole, and then the volunteers, priceless. They do great work for us. And then after, we do a full assessment. I think the 2009 flood, I have close to 3 hours of just videotape where I walked around just with a video camera documenting anything and everything. It was in our park, on our street, dirt, leaves, whatever, anything that had to be cleaned up. So when the FEMA dollars came free, we could go get whatever we needed to cover the cost of all the cleanup and to prove that we had a mess on our hands, that the river did get as high as we saw on TV. And that's it. A little slideshow Wendy put together for you. Thank you.
About before the areas that you know the river comes in. I do have one more thing, and that's the community rating system. So this is something that's new this year, and Yori kind of headed this up. Through FEMA, we sat down and just went through a huge checklist, basically, of things we do, both in public works and planning, to help prepare the community for flood. And so we going through that checklist, we were able to get a 15% insurance deduction off the insurance premium rates for the citizens of Ferndale. So, I don't know, Yori, did you have anything else you wanted to add on that?
No, I mean, you basically said it is for all the citizens of Ferndale that are within the floodplain that get that discount.
So, any questions?
Nope. Thank you.
All right,
wonderful.
Thanks.
Good job. Thank you.
Yes.
Questions from the audience about flood preparedness?
Okay. I'll give you a couple seconds.
Mr. B.I.
Okay, Council, probably we're going to move to the main event of the evening. I suspect most of the crowd isn't here for the fee code amendment later on in the agenda.
You don't know that.
For the next one. So how did we get here, and where are we are, and what are we talking about,
Mr.
tonight?
Mayor?
Yes?
A point of personal privilege. Everyone received an email this morning that mentioned me personally. It also mentioned my granddaughter and the use of this park. It created for me, it didn't create a conflict of interest, but it did create an appearance of fairness issue that should I vote not to surplus this property, I could be accused easily of being influenced as a result of something my granddaughter has viewed. Therefore, I will be excusing myself from this discussion as well as from the room and will not be voting on this issue later on. Kathy will call me on my cell phone when you folks are done.
Okay. So we'll give you a second to clear the room. Councilperson Olson?
I'm almost considering a motion to send this back to kill it because the information that we've got is completely different than we all listened to in the committee meeting than what we have before us. And why we should even discuss this with the bad information that we've got, and now all of a sudden we're bringing it here, and we've been enlightened that it's even in the 2013 Master Parks Plan, when we were told it was nothing but a surplus lot. It has debris and anything on it. That's very aggravating for me, that we would even be told this by the people, by city administration.
Well, you certainly could move it back to committee. I would respect the fact that people have taken time out of their evening, and I would suspect some would like to speak to you. And it's tough for people. I mean, it's.
Oh, I'm not trying to cut anybody out of that.
Okay.
It's that I don't think this would have gotten here and even been on this agenda if we'd have had the information we have right now.
What is the information that's totally different?
That it's actually being a used park.
It's not an empty lot. There's no trash in the lot. It's a beautiful park that's been developed and is being maintained and being maintained quite well.
And that's not what we got.
And we were told it was a dump.
I don't think you heard that it was a dump.
Well, we did. We heard that people were dumping their lawn clippings in it and their trimmings and their brush trimmings, and that's what we were told. Uh-huh.
Well, I don't think that was said. So, Council, this is your meeting. I mean, where do you want to go with this? Councilperson Metzler?
I'd like to make a motion that the City Council reaffirm the parks plan that's in existence, and specifically as it relates to Horizon View Park, and then go on to other matters.
Second.
Councilperson Watson?
I guess I would like to clarify exactly what it says. Does anyone have a copy of exactly what it says? So you're basically saying the park will remain as it is because in that plan it specifically says that it's a neighborhood park that will remain.
It is a neighborhood park. It's being used as such. And I'm just assuming reaffirm that. So I have a feeling that's what this council doesn't want to do. And I'd like to have these folks just have a sense of relief and go home and go to sleep and not worry about it anymore.
Can staff confirm to me that that's exactly what that motion would mean?
I'll go to Community Development Director on it.
The current parks plan does include Horizon View as one of our neighborhood parks. It labels it as a fully developed neighborhood park. I think that the action that was proposed by staff would be asking council whether they want to switch the designation from a developed park to a surplus property.
That's not my motion. My motion is totally symbolic, but it's to reaffirm what that park plan says that you just read. That was my motion.
Which
was seconded, I believe, by somebody.
It was.
So I'll speak to your motion for a second. Is every Friday I ask the employees of the City of Ferndale, we meet at 8 o'clock and we go from 8 to 9 o'clock, and I ask our employees to think of ways to run our city better, to save money, to look at ways to try to save different and do different things. So the impetus or process of this was brought forward to say,
you know, this is a park that, yes, it is maintained. It is a difficult park to maintain. It's wet at times. You know, we take a different mower there. And the suggestion was, and we have made this indication in the parks plan, that if a developer came to us today and said, how this park was formed, I sat with a member of the parks board this morning for coffee, a retired member of the parks board, a developer would do a plat, and then in the past, we would say, would you like to donate some land in your plat for parks in lieu of parks mitigation fees? So you wouldn't have to pay parks mitigation fees on the houses you're going to develop if you would give the city land. And we went forward on that. Now, and I understand where you're going, but I don't want to understand where you're going, is we have determined that all those little pocket parks are difficult to maintain. You looked at our budget. If I brought members of our parks board up, they would tell you that we're not maintaining all of our parks adequately. We are not able to keep up with all of our maintenance. We do a good job in terms of our main parks. You have not done a good job in terms of this park of we mow it when we can. There's a sign there. If that park is going to be a park, it should have some amenities. A lot of our pocket parks have things for people to do. Maybe it's a trail. Maybe it's the fact that we do drainage work there where the bottom half isn't wet, you know, most of the year. So, but that's okay. I understand where you're going. I understand you've gotten those letters. But staff has told you that we need to change our direction. If we did a plat today, we would not allow this to be done. We'd say no. We want your parks mitigation, and we'll go use your park mitigation fees to try to do other capital projects. So that's great, but that's where the direction we're going. And so if you want to go that direction, that's great. I'm going to remember this conversation when you want to make a vote that you don't think that we should find any more funds for park mitigation or anything. But that's where we are. This came from staff to say, you know, we have a hard time doing all our parks. We have parks that have somebody keeps melting the plastic slides. The maintenance around some of our signs is terrible. The Parks Board can tell you where. And members of the Parks Board basically adopt certain parks. Their list. I wish one of you would go to Parks Board meetings with me. Councilperson Goodrich goes. And every Parks Board meeting is, if I could say not to go to Parks Board meetings, I would not go to Parks Board meetings, because every Parks Board meeting is a, Mr. Mayor, we need more money to do this. You're not doing this. You're not maintaining this. You're not maintaining this. You're not doing this. And I go home from Parks Board meeting and it's like, oh, I got a headache. Because most of the time they're asking me for things and I say no. And I say no. No, I don't have enough money to replace that. I don't have enough money to put another playground in this. And so I understand where you're going, but I want you to feel my pain. I want you to come to a Parks Board meeting and face those people that are frustrated, because you look and saw tonight in your budget for parks mitigation for capital projects. Well, there is none. There is none for improvements to parks. So that's great. Now I'll let you argue back with me, Councilor Goodrich. I'll start with you. I'll go to Councilperson Mutzler, and then I'll go to Councilperson Goodrich, and then back to Councilperson Wilson. So Councilperson Watts.
Okay. I guess I'm confused. We've been talking about this for more than a month, and we all gave staff the impression that we wanted them to go do this. And so I appreciate that we got the emails, and I've seen this little green space, but I know we're trying to blame staff now, but we've talked about this a lot, and we kept telling staff to come to us with more information on how we might split it up, because we were going to use this money for Star Park. And I appreciate that there's 40 families that love this little green space, but we're talking about doing a park for thousands of kids, and fixing our community center. I appreciate that. It was amazing to get a petition together that quickly. That was very impressive. We did, but I don't understand what's changed overnight. I mean, I drove by. It's a nice little green space, but it's nothing compared to what we're going to do if we build a Star Park. So I guess we're just not going to have the conversation now. Everybody's like, they got letters, and now they don't want to make people unhappy. Or I don't understand what's happened. Because now everything just suddenly shifted, and we're blaming staff for something, and I don't get it. That's all.
Maybe they have a magic money tree we don't know about. Councilperson Mutchler.
And debate does call a red herring. No disrespect, Mr. Mayor. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about tonight. We're talking about this part. And we made some preliminary direction to staff based on certain assumptions about this park not being used. I went there late at night the first time I saw it, saw some trees. It looked like it was kind of woodsy area. And I have not said anything to blame anybody. I actually think the best thing for the city right now is to pass my motion and move on to the next thing. But if you want to drag it out, go ahead. This is we're not gonna close this park. It's not going to happen. And I think we just move on. It's not a good idea.
Councilperson Goodrich and then Councilperson Olson.
I personally have mixed feelings about it. Sitting in the council committee meeting discussion, sitting at the Parks Board meeting, hearing some of the Parks Board people comment about it, I was in the position of Leo saw it because the recommendation of the Parks Board, and their chairman is here, can verify this, is the idea that if we sold the property, that part of the proceeds would go to Star Park, part of the proceeds would go to fixing up the community center. And it was a way to generate money for both of those. The park wasn't used. It was a yucky park. I went up there today. Maybe I hit it at a nice time, but I thought, dang, this is a nice little park, a little green space. Do all parks have to have slides, swings, sandboxes, merry-go-rounds to be considered a functional park? Or is having a green space where you can throw a football around or something a legitimate park? I wondered what is the fully developed or whatever the description was in the plan there. I think what that really means. Does that mean swings, slides, and all that stuff, or is it just a park that we put a sign up in front of and we mow the grass periodically? So that's kind of where my question is on that.
One of the main purposes of the parks plan was to recognize that the city's old practice of having a pocket park in every neighborhood complete with the slide and swing sets was a bygone era, and that parks do not need all of those elements to be a park. That one of the things that makes a park system unique is that the parks in it are unique. So you have something which is a pocket park, which we don't do really any longer, and then perhaps you have also a unique park, which council gets to make their decision on that. It's a tough one.
I personally did not get to walk the park today because there was some construction going on at a house, and there was a big rig dump truck parked in there, and there wasn't really a place for me to park to get out to walk it. I just looked at it from my truck and thought, this is a green space. Is it is that viable to have in a neighborhood?
Yeah, actually, I just wanted to add here, just kind of background too. As our community development director mentioned, we have changed the thrust or the direction of the park plan to have larger, more centralized, more amenity rich parks rather than a little tiny spot in every cul-de-sac or every development. I did go up there today as well. I think this park is probably the most popular park in town, at least over the last day or two when it comes to elected officials. There probably was a parade of official cars going up there. But when I was there, I was able to get out and walk around, and it is wet. I know our crew has to use a different mower than other mowers, and it has got our big mower has gotten stuck, and then they brought in a truck which got stuck. So it does have some drainage issues that the mayor mentioned. One thing that I did notice is that on two sides there are fences. I assuming they're the rear property fences of the next road over. So when we talked internally about, this is going back a few months, about if we had any surplus land, one of the criteria was, given the direction of our current parks plan, are there parks that no longer fit into that vision that are somewhat isolated? You're probably aware that we've been working very hard to be sure, or try to the extent we can, that there's a trail system kind of connecting our parks or connecting one subdivision to another. This is the quintessential cul-de-sac dead end with a park there, that if you wanted to get to the park, you have to walk down the cul-de-sac because there is no other access from it. And I think that's the reason why staff brought it forward as a potential surplus park, because it did not fit into our park plan. It is small. It is amenity deficient, if you will. There are no swings, no playground, and it is somewhat isolated insofar as if you wanted to use it, even if you lived next door to it, that is on the other side of the fence, you would have to walk out of your subdivision and down into this area. So because of, I think, the unique characteristics of this park, it's the one that came to the surface as far as something to consider. It has been there for a while. The trees are somewhat mature. It probably does provide a good amenity for those who live nearby or somewhat adjacent to it. But I just want you to know that the reason why it came forward is that we were kind of given the charge to see if there was any parkland out there unused. And unused is a term of art, and in this case, unimproved. And in this case, what it meant was this is passive open space. There's nothing to do there as far as amenities. Again, if you want to go down there with a Frisbee or a blanket for a picnic, that's perfectly appropriate for that. But it did have limited utility when we looked at our entire park system, and that's what we were trying to do. We were trying to look at the city as a whole, and I can't think of a piece of property in town that the neighbors probably wouldn't like us to keep it, because the feelings, the warm feelings, are usually geographically located. Someone who lives across the town probably doesn't care as much about this park as someone who lives there. I mean, that's just human nature. So we didn't try to pick something that no one cared about. Otherwise, we wouldn't have let anyone know we were doing this. We do care about parks. We do care about the entire park system. So we were looking at the greater need of the park system. So that's kind of the format and the background by which this came forward. It's a passive open space with few amenities, somewhat isolated, difficult to maintain. It seemed to fit that criteria of potential parkland whose funds could be utilized in a different manner. So that's the background as to why this particular one, came to the fore.
Councilperson Olson is next.
Maybe that's the problem, is we have differing opinions of unimproved. Because I would hate to think somebody tried to pull the wool over our eyes by saying this is an unused, just hunk of woods. It's basically what we were led to believe. And this kind of answers your question.
I didn't get that impression, that's why I said it.
I do. And maybe it was one committee. I don't know, it went to several different.
It must have been a different committee.
But if I would have known that we're mowing it and maintaining it that way, I think I would have said something at the time. But we have to find out later, after the fact, that we're actually maintaining this thing, and it's in our parks thing, and it's, we're calling it all these things when we're led to believe it's just a hunk of woods, let's get rid of it. So if you want to bring this and frame this discussion as to it's a park, but we want to get rid of it, then that's one thing. But it's not a hunk of land, and we just need to get rid of it, because that's what it was Wednesday morning.
Councilperson Nussler?
I don't want staff or the mayor to take a defensive posture. Greg, when you are defensive, you're long-winded, and you're like, you need... I'm like, this
always,
I'm trying, I'm on this one goodness, trying to ease your pain. You need, listen up, you need four votes to sell this piece of property. You don't have four votes tonight. I'm trying to... if you want to hear all these folks, that's fine, but I'm just trying to move on and get over with this thing, because it's not, we're not going to sell this piece of property. I'm not trying to blame anybody. I'm going to assume you're all well-meaning, but you are well-meaning. But this is not what we thought it was, and let's call the vote, move on, and do something else here.
Councilperson Ingram.
I got the sinking chair tonight. I'm going to be like a little kid in a minute. I would like to ask a question of a representative from the neighborhood, if anybody would like to represent the neighborhood.
Who did the petition?
If you wish, but you can shout.
We need a correction.
For the record.
It's hard to get him on the recording. So if you can come and just twist that around, and then just your name and for the record.
Darren Summers, 6188 Cascade Drive.
Do you folks have a homeowners association?
We don't currently have a homeowners association. But we've talked about...
Would you entertain creating one?
Yeah.
The reason I ask, I'm going to explain where I'm kind of going here. Councilmember Watson and I live in the same neighborhood, and we have a homeowners association, and the homeowners association pays dues. The homeowners pay dues into the association, and we maintain our own parks. The city doesn't loan, the city doesn't repair them, we do. And I think that possibly a really clean solution to this that would save your park forever, form a homeowners association, put a little money from each house into the pot every year, and maintain the park. Because if you can maintain it, takes it off of our rolls, and that way we're not sending staff up there to mow it and get mowers stuck and get trucks stuck, which ruins the park. And you guys can have a landscape company come in there. Do you remember what we're what Watkins charging us?
Well, it's a lot, but we have...
We have huge parks.
So it's different.
And we have two very, very large parks in our neighborhoods, but I still think it's $1,200 a month or something like that. But, I mean, we're talking about many, many acres. Not the little park that you people enjoy so much. We're talking... The park behind my house is 4.3 acres. So...
I'm going to defend Mr. Summers for a second, though, is... You have an established homeowner association with how many homes?
150.
Where Mr. Summers has a neighborhood, even if he's stretched, what? 30,
around 32 or
33.
30, 35?
Yeah, but they'd be taking care of a relatively small park. I mean,
okay, well, I'll
it was just something
yield the floor to Mr. Summers.
It was just something I just kind of wanted to throw it out there and
okay.
Maybe
good,
we can
good
move
point.
On.
Well, we indeed noticed in the master plan that was created for the parks that one of the concepts we'd like to promote is something called an Adopt-a-Park program. And I don't know if that's been fully fleshed out, but we're very interested in helping in becoming adoptees of our park. To what extent we're able to fund and provide maintenance to that park remains to be seen. We'd have to explore that. But I don't think any one of us is opposed to the idea of pitching in and helping out with a park.
Well, that's perfect because we're going into the wintertime. The grass is going to go dormant. Things are going to get cold. So basically, you guys have got the entire winter until probably about April to figure out if it's something you can feasibly do. And then if that time comes and you say it is something we can do, you could probably come back to us and say, this is what we want to do.
Well, I'd also be interested in exploring or hearing from those that created the idea of the Adopt-a-Park, more details about what that is, what that would look like, how it would work. Because if that's another option as opposed to forming a homeowners association,
sure.
We need to explore all options before we make a decision.
That guy right there.
Well, there's a couple of parks board
without the front
members
space.
Right in the back, too.
And if we'd like, if I'd be happy to, as would a lot of my neighbors, to sit down with you folks to discuss what that would look like. Maybe we've already, whether you know it or not, we've already adopted that park. There was a time in 2008 when gas prices went through the ceiling and the recession hit, and the city claimed legitimately that they had no funds to mow that park. Many of my neighbors gathered their own equipment and went over there to maintain that park. I brought photographs of that in action. We went over with weed eaters and mowers, and maybe we shouldn't have, but we cared enough about that park to maintain it. And we'd be willing to participate in that way and other ways, whatever it takes to keep our park healthy, viable, and an excellent resource for our little neighborhood. Indeed, we are a little neighborhood, and it's a little park, but they go hand in hand with one another.
Can we leave it at that and call for the question on John's motion?
You calling for the question?
John, are you calling for the questions?
I want to make a quick comment.
Okay,
Councilperson Mussler.
Good. God bless you, Bob. Totally like what you're saying with it. But I want to remind you of it. These families pay property taxes like everybody else. And there are how many pocket parks out there? A number of these little parks, you know. And they shouldn't have less maintenance and care just because they're benevolent enough to want it. So I just want us not to single them out, have to take care of their own park if we're taking care of other parks. So it needs to be fair and equal. But I appreciate the testimony. These guys are taking care of this park, but the city didn't have the money. So I remove the question.
Sure.
Second.
Okay, call for questions. That would end discussion. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries.
Enjoy your park.
No, that was just calling for questions.
So the, and then the main motion was to just this issue is done.
Yeah.
Okay, so any further discussion on that? Do you got the second on that one?
Yes.
Okay. But the second. Okay. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
No. I oppose.
What's that?
I was a no.
What's that?
I was a no.
Okay.
I didn't want to
cut. Great discussion. I think an okay answer, but it remains to the fact of, and you know this is all coming, so I want the audience to listen, and I want all of us to listen. It is not a doubt that we have problems in our park with maintenance. I still urge you to come to our Parks Board meeting. I urge you to come to our Parks Board meeting, third Thursday of every month. Call City Hall. But if we want a great park system, if we want this park to be better, we want better park systems.
We're done. Come on back.
Our citizens have asked for trails. They've asked for amenities. Star Park is a great idea. I think it's one of the better ideas we've ever heard. I attended the Washington State Trails Conference in Bellingham. Largest participation of the conference ever. Bigger than even when they had it in Seattle. And the reason was, is every person said, gosh, you had so many things to do in Bellingham because of their trails and their amenities, and so many people hadn't, you know, come to Washington before, and they go, God, you guys in Washington got it going. This is great. And they walked our facilities. We have the potential to have, and I want to someday say we have a great park system. Mm-hmm. And you guys know my dream of how to do that. And what we'll discuss later, and I hope all of you are involved in it, because I want us to have a great, not just a park system where Bo has to come and say, hey, Gary, somebody melted the slide again. Okay, that's great, Bo. I don't have any money to fix the slide. Can you make it whole for 3 or 4 months? That's not great. I want this city to have a great park system that everybody does. We're building homes with smaller lots. Look at some of these lots. You see your neighbors. I mean, it's like I grew up where I didn't have to have a park because I had a big lawn and a woods next to me, and I could go play forever. Well, those days are gone. We're building homes with small lawns, and so I believe in parks. I think we have a way of getting there. I hope all these people get involved, and I hope you get involved in a way towards a better park system. Councilperson Ingram, then Councilperson Mussler.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Or is it possible for you to kind of flesh out that adopt-a-park idea and actually maybe get it out to the public? I think there's some other parks in Ferndale that the neighbors wouldn't mind adopting, so to speak, and taking care of to kind of take some pressure off of our people. I didn't even know we had that program until this event came up.
The way that I'd like to answer that is... yes, we will certainly discuss it and see what the city can do legally and fitting in with everything else.
Councilperson Mussler.
Mr. Mayor, we want great parks. I remember when we looked at the numbers on this piece of property, maybe $300,000. And, you know, in my mind, I spent it already, too. And I just wanted to admit that. I mean, the Star Park. We understand. I mean, really. But I think the lesson in this thing is communicating and reaching out, and we weren't legally required to send out letters. I just think this is a fairly recent idea, about a month, I think, this has been floating around approximately. I think the lesson here is we just got to communicate and reach out and find out what neighbors think and want. It made a difference here, and I think we always make better decisions when we reach out to the community and find out what's important to you.
Lesson learned.
Okay. So, moving on in the agenda, thank all of you for coming. If some of you do happen to leave, I want to announce a meeting because you've shown an interest in Ferndale and our parks on Monday the 27th of this month at 6 o'clock at Pioneer Pavilion. We'll have an open public meeting on what are we going to do with our community center and what should it be, what should be in that community center, and what's there. Members of the Parks Board will be there. That's the, so the library's in the Pioneer Pavilion now. And then they'll be moved out, so we'll have an empty building to kind of wander around. There'll still be, just to warn you, there'll still be some kind of equipment there, but we'll kind of walk the building and say, okay, what do we want in a community center? So you're all invited, 6 p.m. the 27th, which is next Monday.
Next Monday.
And make a difference day. If you'd love to show up our new parking lot by City Hall that also includes the library, help us plant a tree on Saturday, and you get...
Snacks.
Okay, well, bagels, there you go.
Well, there's 1,765 trees, so
yeah.
Come. We live in the Cascade area. We live on Oak here. But we never had any letter left at our house. We never had any notification. Well, that's part of our park, too. And we use that park. But why weren't we notified on our street?
So we did...
We did the Cascade Drive and maybe just a little bit around it. I don't think we did the... The streets beyond that.
Probably should have expanded it.
Yeah.
I'm also on Oakview, Place 6192, top of the hill, end of the cul-de-sac, and that part, Cascade Drive, Oakview, is essentially one neighborhood.
Okay.
And again,
well, you've got your park, so I would assume we probably wouldn't bring that back for a while.
Susan, can you get that for the minutes for Sam? Just not the names, but just the thought.
No, I don't think it's going to come back again. But I still think it should be improved. Our Parks Board Chairman, would you like to come forward and say something? Or?
Sure.
For Sam's sake, who's going to be doing the minutes? Well, because it's gone.
It's voted.
It's over. It's done with.
You don't need to worry, Mel. It'll stay.
So you are? You are? Sir, you are?
Oh, I'm Rob Nordhaus. Thank you. 6944 Dahlberg Road, Ferndale. I'm the Park Board Chair. I just wanted to explain to everyone, this is a great... outpouring of support for this park. This is something that was, you guys did it perfect. You came, you talked, you showed us what you were concerned about and what's important to you. When, you know, don't all come down on the mayor here, this was born out of a need to get creative in trying to fund certain things. So, we have the Star Park that didn't get the grant. We have a
community center.
Community center that is going to be sitting vacant. And so this is where that kind of came from. Being the park board chair, the mayor brought it to our board. And me personally, I remember the park. I go around to all the parks. I survey them. I look at them. I see what can be used in this park, what can be utilized, how it can be improved, and all that kind of stuff. So when I went up for that part, I was there many times, and I didn't see too many people using it. It was a difficult part to upgrade. So that was kind of where that decision came from. We got reports like from Public Works that it's extremely difficult to mow. I walked through there, spring, summer, still squashy, still wet. So that's kind of where that decision came from. But it was nice to see the outpouring support for that park. As a park board chair and seeing that, I know someone was worried that this is going to come up again. It's doubtful. So just that you're... it's not something that we're looking around and just going around going, okay, we're going to pick that park. And we're going to put houses on it because we want to do that. No, it was just born out of a kind of a, we have no money, we need to try to get money. This was something that came up, it was explored, and like I said, it worked out perfect. So I'm good to see you guys.
And your meetings, and you have an opening on your Parks Board.
Yes.
Yes. Another member.
Yes. Yep. So we meet every third Thursday of the month. Usually we don't have a meeting in December, but we do have our meeting from November. We do have an opening. And even if we didn't have an opening, I would recommend people to come to be sitting in the park.
What time is that?
It's at 6:30, and it's in Burson House.
Where is it?
Burson House.
Yeah.
And Rob brings pizza every once in a while.
Oh, no, don't tease people.
And Bob,
he brought it last time.
Yeah. Really? Bergson House is, do you know where the Future Star Park is going to be?
Do you know where the community garden is?
Yeah, there you go.
At the south end of Pioneer Park, there's a parking lot and then an older-looking farmhouse. Mm-hmm. That's the original Bergson House, and we bought part of their land to create ConocoPhillips at Huddingfield. And then the community garden is right in front. So we do that at 6:00. After our parks meeting last time, because the lights have went out in that parking lot, and let's we had one parks board member fall flat on their face. We had another one slip, fall on his knee. Some uncoordinated mayor. So all you guys must have left there. It's like I ran right into the curb because the light burned out there.
Oh, the other night?
Yeah.
Oh,
Galen fell down and hurt himself, and then I fell on my knees. And yeah, you guys never came out and helped me.
Oh, I'm sorry. That one light is the only one that works. It comes on when you activate it.
Yeah, so, so be careful. Bring a flashlight.
Yeah. That's where the Future Star Park will be, too. So if you look at the over by the Pioneer Park, you see like a big open space. And that's the parking lot. That is the Future Star Park.
Do you have something for Rob?
Yeah.
Rob just Smithler?
Yeah. Really appreciate what you do. I know that there's disappointments, the Star Park grant, even this, and you hang in there, and you're working with nothing except guts and talent. The first time I met you, we were cutting that trail with the Boy Scouts, you know, so I really appreciate, we all appreciate what you do. I know it's hard, but so no money, you know.
Oh, no, we hang in there. Gory's always coming up with something. He's always fighting, and the mayor's coming up with great ideas. And, we get a little discouraged when we go, and we don't beat up on him as much as he said.
He's not telling the truth.
Poor little Gary.
But I know this could be disappointing. I mean,
no, not at all. This was actually not disappointing at all. Like I said, that's why I wanted to come up here. This wasn't disappointing at all. I love to see the support. This is exactly what I'm looking for as far as a chairperson for a park board, is the community coming up and say, no, we want this, and we are willing to do something about it. It's a different story if they would have came up and said, yeah, we want our park, and we really don't. Yeah, we don't have the time to do anything for it. See, that would have been a totally different story to me, and I would have been sitting back there going, "Well, there's another group that says, yeah, we want the pie in the sky, but we don't want to do anything for it." You guys weren't like that. You came up and said, "Yeah, we, as a community or as a neighborhood, we want to work it." So no, this wasn't disappointing at all. I think it was great.
Well done. Okay. Awesome. Group hug.
That's okay.
Ew.
Pass. Okay. Ordinance, development permit, complete application definition.
Folks know they don't have to. They don't have to. You're allowed to leave.
Because all this stuff's really exciting. But,
you don't have to stay. It's okay. You can if you want. Because Yuri's always very exciting.
The high school kids have to stay till 8 o'clock.
Yeah, don't. High school kids,
you can't leave. Sorry. Trapped like the rest of us.
I'll give you wait like 2 minutes.
All right. It just did nothing.
Everybody chant.
And it poof, just all went away.
Oops. Thanks for coming.
It was 5-1.
I voted for
it. Right?
There you go.
I wanted to sell the damn thing. I want money for the Star Wars.
Appreciate you guys.
Yeah. It's a cute little green space. Hey, resident county, we don't need no parks or fireworks or nothing.
We'll ban everything out of the
park. You'll ban everything.
We'll go back one more minute. Oh, yeah. Let's go back to
it. It's green. It's a
why do we have a problem with the
blackberries?
Look at that.
Well, you know. Created development.
Well, yeah, they have to see education. Government at work, right?
The neighbors will probably say, oh, what's my dog out there?
You know, because the deal is you're just
going to go up. We're still a resident now if you come with enough people.
It's my wife's birthday night, so.
Yeah, what was the difference?
I'd like to take
no, we have important things to do. Okay, we're going to go back into session, so if you just whisper quietly, that's perfect.
Please read over the whole staff report.
your floor.
Okay, I'm going to translate into the Spanish first.
I pushed that last thing.
All right.
Here's your punishment.
Back to work.
So we have the next two items on your agenda are very much interrelated. The first one has to do with development requirements or application requirements, and the next one, if you like the first one, we ask you to approve it. So I'll explain, because the first one, Chapter 14.07, has a couple of different parts to it. Last time when we were here talking to you, when I was here talking to you about how our staff is recently, not overwhelmed, because they'll never be overwhelmed, but have a lot of work ahead of them, we talked about the fact that the way that we've arranged our staffing levels really based on a post-recession basis where there wasn't a lot of development coming in. So we were able to focus much more on each and every individual application and kind of shepherd them through the process and protect them as much as we could. But now that the economy is recovering, we're seeing a lot of development applications coming in. The treasurer will say that we haven't yet received the building permits for them, and he's right, but we're seeing a lot of folks coming in and asking questions. One of the reasons why we might not be seeing a lot of the building permits yet is because quite a few of these folks are really just kicking the tires. They might not be ready to develop right now. They might not even be really ready to purchase property. They might not even be serious about developing, but we've made it cheap enough, and we've made it so that they can get a lot of staff time and a lot of attention where it kind of rewards that kicking the tires. We don't want to ever prevent someone from coming into Ferndale and asking the questions. But what we found is when we're trying to get someone through the whole process, when they're just kicking the tires, it does them a disservice, and it does staff a disservice, and it does the public a disservice. So we're wanting to make it where we can have a kind of pre-application meeting with community development staff where we're basically giving them the public information that's already available. And that's for the kicking of the tires, and then have a more intensive process, very similar to what we have right now, through the technical review committee for those folks that are serious or want something written down on paper that will give them some consistent expectations. That's the first part of the amendment, and it relates to the fee code that comes next. The other part of it is something that, as we've switched insurers, both our city attorney, our previous insurer, and our current insurer are saying you need to put into code what your application requirements are to protect an applicant so that they have consistent expectations, and to protect staff in the city so that we don't run into an issue where there's confusion or, in the worst-case scenario, where your staff is actually intentionally changing the application requirements to prevent someone from vesting. So the city attorney has looked at Chapter 14.07. She has said it's good. We just heard down in Spokane on Friday our insurer telling anyone that would listen, you must do this. So what I'm asking you for is an approval of the first ordinance, which is an amendment to Chapter 14.07, followed by, as a separate action, an approval of the fee code amendment. Happy to answer any questions.
Did we do an ordinance number yet, or are they okay? Are they just say ordinance without a number?
But you need a separate.
Okay. We do need two separate ordinances.
Who was the first hand up? Do you guys remember?
I think Paul was.
Paul was first hand up.
So
Councilperson
moved.
Ingram?
So moved.
Second.
Seconded. So moved and seconded by Councilperson Goodrich. Councilperson Olson?
I'm sorry. Are you moving to?
Approve just the
first one.
Number six.
Dory, as I mentioned in committee, I've still been thinking about this. I have complete faith in you. I just am absolutely, utterly opposed to somebody writing their business plan on a napkin and shoving it in front of you just to try and beat the clock. And I cannot, nothing against you or the attorney. I don't care what the state says. That, to me, is wrong.
What?
And I understand what they're saying, but I don't like it, and I really don't care what the state has to say. That should be accepted because the state says a lot of wrong things. I understand the need for it, having gone through, like we talked about earlier, having gone through with what I went through with Lewis County, and it's like somebody back in Georgia in the 60s, and we still got that kind of crap going on now. And I understand the need for this in order to prevent people like Lewis County that does this stuff now, like game plan. So I'm just going to abstain. I can't go either way.
But in Councilmember Olson, if I could just respond, because I thought about what you said at committee. I think that what we require here is something more than back of a napkin, and I know that everyone's definition of what back of a napkin is could vary.
Like unimproved.
Right. There are, in our application materials, quite a few different things that they still need to submit. So it's not that someone could just materialize and put it together. And I'll just give you an example from today where we had some applicants coming in who wanted to do a fairly simple project. And we gave them the application materials, and they said, okay, well, we'll just fill these application materials out and get them going. And I thought, oh, gosh, you know, this is exactly what Councilmember Olson is saying. They came in at 1, and we had to kick them out at 4:45. Because they weren't done. So the rigorousness of our application took them 3 hours to put together, and they had all the drawings all set. So it
isn't that simple as the back of a napkin.
It is not. It is not. Now, could they propose something that, had they had given it more time, could it have been a better product? Yes, absolutely. But We tend to over-regulate, not under-regulate, as far as our application materials.
Okay, well, that would change my mind.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Cool. Which is the objective.
Okay, unless you're
any
right.
Further questions or clarification on this issue? Councilperson Bush?
I just have a comment about the dates on these two ordinances. It says the 22nd and not the 20th.
You didn't change those yet.
It was the ordinance.
And the nice lady told you that, too.
She did, and I thought that she was talking about the staff report. So I went back and I looked at the staff report, and the staff report said October 20th. And I thought, well, you know, Councilmember Bursch is cooking different cupcakes these days. But it turns out it was an ordinance.
And so the reason is we changed the date.
Green inspection or cupcakes?
So you
give
after
these
vote,
people
you,
a
you
do
sign
your
a
contract?
Number and the date.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so that clarification has been made. Okay, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Councilperson Mutchler?
I move the adoption of Agenda Bill 007, which is on the feed itself.
Does that kill people?
Second.
What? 007?
I don't know. License to kill? I don't think we should do
Bond.
That.
It's Mutchler, yes. As in John Mutchler.
I don't think we have insurance for that.
007, so it says.
Okay, seconded.
Seconded,
okay. Any further discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion carries. 7-0.
Thank you, Council.
Must
great
be
job.
Something on TV at 8 o'clock or something.
Okay, moving on to mayor report. So, again, I attended the Washington State Trails Conference. It's an interesting thing is what people from out of the state were unbelievably fascinated with was the South Bay Trail in Bellingham, where Woods Coffee had a representative there and said, it's our most profitable coffee shop, and most people walk to it.
Mm-hmm.
There was a guy from Montana. He goes, they walk to have coffee, and he said, yeah, it's our most profitable shop. But the theme was is that I didn't realize around the nation is how much trails are becoming economic development, and there's a generation of people that go to walk on trails, and so they had all these lists. And I'm looking at all these cities with the maps, and it's like, oh, here's this city from there. It's like, oh, yeah, we have people stay at this hotel and they go this trail. So you look as we were showing in the Nooksack Loop Trail in Ferndale, and they go, gosh, you guys have a bunch of where people will come and walk your trails and stay there. It's like, yeah, okay, we just got to find a way to do that. It's just amazing. It was a neat conference. So we had a Ferndale Food Bank fundraiser in the barn. It was nicely done in the barn. It's amazing how the barn can serve as a great rental, contrary to some people's opinion. And I think they raised, Chief, you remember, over 6,000? So great fundraiser. So, hey, $6,000, as in the food bank's director, buys a lot of milk for babies. So it was kind of a neat event.
So, again, this Saturday, 9 a.m., our parking lot, trees are going in right now, shrubs are going in, and we'll add more shrubs. We're certainly going to have enough shrubs and trees in that area. Downtown trick-or-treat, I like it when employees come up with great ideas. Our public works director has left, but a great idea by our public works director. I love that Bo came and said, you know, this downtown trick-or-treat has become a big deal. Let's close the streets. Let's make it safe for kids. So, you know, tell your friends and neighbors from 1st to 3rd, we're closing. Do you know the times?
2 o'clock to 3
to 6?
We'll close the streets.
It won't.
An hour before and an hour after.
Okay, great. So, great event. I like it when employees think, yeah, we can do that. That's a great idea.
Is 3rd open, or do they need to go to 4?
I thought 3rd was
open. Around.
No, they're going to close right there at the bank, right at the Washington Federal, I believe. So
no,
you can
third
still
will stay open.
So you can still go through 3rd. You just can't take a left or come through it, I believe.
Can't take a left or you can't take a right. Oh.
You can't make it, like you're coming on.
You can't turn into downtown.
Right, you'd have to go down to Alder.
Well, the reason I ask is there's always a bottleneck at one of the lights in those situations.
Oh, we're doing the street festival?
It's almost better if you flip those lights to flashing. Then traffic can get through. Because the street festival, 4th, is a bottleneck.
So if that would it, could we do that?
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
3rd and
Main.
Probably 4th and Main, both.
3rd and 4th. Yeah.
Just make them both flashing?
Mm-hmm. Both flashing reds.
Very good suggestion. Thank you. Mr. Kelton, thanks you for that. He can't figure out how to drive. Okay, so and again, Monday the 27th, 6 p.m., Pioneer Pavilion. Hope we'll have enough chairs. There'll still be some equipment there. Councilperson Watson?
Library closing Wednesday at 9 p.m.
Are we on council reports yet, or we're still on mayor?
You pointed at me and said Councilmember Watson. Therefore, this is my council report. So.
Okay.
Anyway, library's closing at 9 p.m. Wednesday. Going to reopen the following Wednesday at the new location if all goes according to plan.
This Wednesday.
Yeah, and so if you know students who use that for their homework and use the Wi-Fi hotspot, because a lot of the kids with the tablets now use that for homework, let them know that it's not going to be, the building's not going to be available for the whole week. And I don't know if you can sit outside
so
and get a hotspot.
Tell everyone in the high school, you right there, I'm pointing at you.
It's no pressure.
Mark that down.
Be quick.
He's going to talk to everybody in the high school.
Oh, good. I'm not even worried about that.
Including all the kids.
Thank you. You may speak right now.
Okay, that's it for mayor reports. Any council reports? Councilperson Ingram and then Councilperson Goodrich.
Well, when you're finished planting trees, if you finish a little early, you've got to be finished before noon. Then you can come over and I'll feed you lunch.
Okay.
Community meal.
Church. Councilperson Goodrich.
Fire district, some of you heard the fire district voted 2-1 to move ahead with the annexation of Ferndale into the fire district.
Yay.
So I'm not sure whose ball the...
Well, we have that ball, and we're rolling it around.
So, when it goes to the county.
County.
Yeah, so that's moving ahead.
We will bring that back because that was an intense discussion today. Okay, any other council reports? Councilor Person Bursch.
The Ferndale Public Market's annual meeting is on August the 30th at 5:30.
October.
Is it the 30th or the 29th?
It's the 30th. At Weeku Bank.
Okay. October 30th at Weeku at what time?
5:30.
Okay, any other council reports? Okay, going to staff. Finance director.
Nothing.
City administrator.
Okay.
Community development director.
Nothing.
Good answer. Deputy clerk.
Just kidding.
Public Works. Do you want to talk about active shooter? I kind of thought that. Police Department.
Good evening, Council. I will remind you of something that you are doubtlessly aware of already. This Thursday, October 23rd, the Ferndale Police Department, in concert with a number of other law enforcement agencies, we'll be conducting a full dress practical exercise at the Ferndale High School to test our the capabilities to respond to a critical incident at a school, any of the schools in Ferndale School District. We have chosen Ferndale High School, however, as the test ground. The actual exercise has been under design for the last 6 months. We have been actually preparing for this exercise for about the last year. It will involve somewhere around 150 people, probably, with students, with actors, with participating police departments, with the Ferndale Police Department. We have forged an excellent working, we always have had, but we have continued to forge an excellent working relationship with the Ferndale School District, the superintendent, and they have been extremely helpful in designing and upgrading the state's rapid responder program. And we ourselves have now just are putting the finishing touches on our protocols for responding to violence in schools in a very formal document. And we thank Yori and his cooperation in helping us map those schools. The exercise will start at about 0800. We actually will be up and about at about 0600, briefing some of the departments that will be participating. We have a number of observers that will be coming to see this. It will involve an active shooter. It will involve some munitions. There will be actual projectiles being shot by the assailant at officers. So the area will be cordoned off. We have Public Works to thank. They will be responding to barricade off streets. There will be notices and signs placed around so neighbors will understand that this is an exercise. I would encourage any of you that are interested in watching the deployment of the active shooter team to come and witness this. The space is limited. If you are interested, if you will be at the police department at 0730, I will make sure that you will come to the site and be positioned where you can see three things. Other than that, you will not see what goes on in the building, the actual confrontation with the person, or how we treat the wounded inside. You will see deployments of the first responding officers to the school. You will watch then the second entry team come. You will watch it form up with other agencies, Border Patrol, as they enter. And then you will see as we evacuate the injured to a triage center right out across from Old Main's main entrance. And at 11 o'clock, then, if you wish, you may participate in the hot wash, which is to look at our performance that day. And then on November in the 15th, there's an actual formal debriefing, but there'll be a two-hour. It's fast-moving. From the time that we actually will receive the 911 call at about 0800 until we have completed our portion of it, the law enforcement portion, it should be over in no more than 40 minutes. After that, what will occur, and simultaneously to an extent, you will watch the children being evacuated up to Vista Middle. You will watch reunification efforts with parents, and you will get to understand the communication links that we're establishing with the auxiliary communication system. Councilmember Watson has been so helpful, and I'm grateful to you for taking the initiative. We will be establishing a number of communication links to coordinate this exercise with not only the entry tactical teams, but with school administration inside so they can tell which areas of the school are under siege, which are safe, which one should be evacuated, as well as the new communication center the Ferndale School District has and just came online last couple of weeks. and that's on Thornton across from the Bender Park, right next to the old Bender Park. And then our links that we will have with Public Works, Border Patrol, CBP, and Vista Middle. So there's a lot of networking, and we're hoping this is a wonderful opportunity for us to test that. You will also see for the first time the MRAP. It's complete, almost. It will respond with an entry team, so you'll get to witness that as well. So we welcome you there.
Any questions of the chief? Councilor Smitser?
So be at the police station at 7:30.
Yes.
Make a reservation, and then what time will we anticipate finished? Did you say 11 or?
At 11, we have the hot wash. We should be out of there at 10:45, no later than.
Scheduled between 7:30 and 11.
Yeah, because the campus will be somewhat barricaded off. Yeah. So once you get in there, you won't be leaving right off.
You said limited space. Should we email you and say we're coming?
No, I'll take your word for it, and I'll write your name right down now. Okay.
There you go. Okay. Good.
Thank you.
So I'm assuming that you're probably not going to want to go to an executive session for funsies. So I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay. All there is anybody saying aye. Okay, right here.